Untukkah makasih atau kemudian mungkin
masih. Okay, so as usual, we'll spend the next couple of minutes in silence do some meditation. Obeisance to my guru and protector Manjushri, who holds to his heart this crucial text involving overseeing all things as they are, whose understanding shines forth as the sun unclouded by defilements or traces of ignorance, who teaches in 60 ways the patient love of the Father for his only Son, all creatures caught in the prison of samsara, confused in the darkness of ignorance, overwhelmed by their suffering. You, whose dragon thunder proclamation of Dharma arouses us from the stupor of our delusions and frees us in the iron chains of our karma, whose powerful sword of wisdom hews down suffering wherever its sprouts appear, clearing away the darkness of all ignorance. I entreat you, O Manjushri, whose main body is adorned in 112 marks of a Buddha, who has completed the 10 stages achieving the highest perfection of a Bodhisattva, who has been pure from the beginning. O Manjushri, O loving one, with the brilliance of your wisdom, illuminate the darkness, enclosing our minds, enlighten our intelligence and wisdom, so that we may gain insight in the Buddhist words and texts that explain them. Om Arabhata Na Deo Om Arabhata Na Deo Om Arabhata Na For question for you. How is the karma that projects a rebirth as a god or demigod accumulated? How is the karma that projects a rebirth as a god or demigod accumulated?
Anybody? No answer? Oh my God. Who's that?
Intention of voluntarily refraining from killing.
That's it?
Yeah, an active intention of voluntarily refraining from killing. This is not really a vow, but maybe you can call it a precepts. One of the five lay precepts. So an intention of intention to voluntarily refrain from killing. So long as the intention is there and is strong, long-lasting, and it's done voluntarily, one accumulates the karma that may become a projecting karma for rebirth in a god or demigod realm. That's my guess.
Why is it maybe?
The karma
What makes different there? Why is it maybe?
Can be a projecting karma for a human rebirth, for example. Can be a projecting karma for a human rebirth.
So one specific cause.
Oh, okay. Then I don't know really.
Yeah. The question is that, yeah.
Have not come across this. I've come across invariable karma, but that one is for the form and formless, for the desire realm god and demigods. My understanding is only like virtues, contaminated virtuous karma pertaining to the desire realm gods. Contaminated virtuous karma. Because in the root text, it's explained there are two types of virtuous karma, invariable and variable. I think, yeah. So the one that is variable one of them is the karma to be born as a desire realm god. is contaminated virtuous karma. But what exactly that is,
The cause of a good rebirth, yeah, is virtue, yeah. And the cause of a rebirth in the miserable realms or the lower realms is non-virtue. So in general,
yeah. Jawa dingin na, mana top cawe na halapan, dingin na lama ini ke, jawa top cawe na miru ke, kasan ti sungut wah tamnina.
If you remember what's mentioned in the text, if the virtue created is strong, then it leads to a rebirth as a god. A middling virtue will lead to a rebirth as a demigod, and a small virtue will lead to a human rebirth. Yeah? So when we talk about virtuous karma, it is mainly the desire, it refers to, I mean, in relation to getting a rebirth as a god, we are talking about desire realm god.
Virtuous karma, yeah.
This is something that we need to think about. Yeah. Of course, I mean, in general, I mean, virtue causes a good rebirth, right? But, and of course, it is virtue, virtuous karma, that leads to a rebirth as a god, a demigod, and a human being. Yeah. But what kind of virtuous karma will project a god rebirth? What kind of projecting karma, virtuous projecting karma, would project a demigod rebirth as well as a human rebirth? Yeah. So it's something that we need to think about. Yeah. So because when you think about it, then you know that it's not so straightforward, right? And you know, there are people who practice giving, you know, were generous with the main motivation of what they're looking for is happiness in this life. To achieve some happiness in this life, they give. Or they may abide in ethics. They live an ethical way of life, but with the main motivation of achieving some happiness in this lifetime. Yeah. So are their actions of keeping ethics and practicing generosity with the intention of achieving happiness in this lifetime, are those actions virtuous actions or not?
This thing you must be able to answer now. Yeah. Yes? No?
Is it a virtuous, is it virtuous karma or not? So with an intention to achieve happiness in this lifetime, the person who practices ethics, right? The person practices ethics. But would he experience any positive results in the future, in the future lives? Yes or no?
Not sure.
Does that person's action of practicing giving or keeping ethics for the happiness of this life alone, those are those actions dharma or not?
Why not? You must be able to explain. You say easy to say no, but it's not easy. It's not dharma. It's not virtuous.
Doesn't benefit others.
It doesn't give result in future. What in the shop? Okay, think about. What to say? That is not something to tell. That is that. Ani, that is not that. That. That is. Ani, that is just something. That is not something. That is not something. That is
not. Okay, we have been looking at the afflictions. Yeah. So we've finished with the view or the transitory collection, the view holding on to the extreme, and conception of bad view as supreme, right? So we finish with those. Today, let's look at a belief in the supremacy of ethics and religious discipline.
Oh, that is so well, that is that's for them to do.
So in the next view, a belief in the supremacy of ethics and religious discipline, or in a more technical translation, is a conception of bad ethics. Yeah. And modes of conduct as a supreme. Yeah. Okay, so what is this? So it is an afflictive intelligence which observes an ethical discipline that renounces faulty ethical discipline, or a religious discipline which requires certain forms of dress, manner, speech, and physical behavior, as well as the mental and physical aggregates on the basis of which these forms of ethics and asceticism occur, and regards them as cleansing you of negativities, freeing you from afflictions, and removing you from cyclic existence.
What is it? That Dela, that Kashijumudwa, that Tambu, that Sudim, Sudim Chokto Timba, say, you might, those who Chokto Timba, that on the Nansela, that did the Lingurwa.
So regarding this belief in the supremacy of ethics and religious discipline, yeah, or conduct, yeah, there are certain ideas about, you know, how certain forms of ethics are supreme. There are also certain ideas about how certain modes of conduct, or is translated here as religious discipline, yeah, how those modes of conduct are the best or supreme, right?
That tsutim lokpa tindu tsutim zinche ta tabi gyuru mandang tsutim lokpa tindu ta tsutim du sungche ta ti tsutim di yakpo res duksin zimbay na ta tsutim shoktu zimba se shita tanda tindu dhuray ta.
So there are certain practices of ethics here, which which will not lead to a liberation here, right? So there is a concept or belief that these forms of ethics, which will not lead to liberation, there's a concept of feeling that these forms of ethics are good, you know. Right, so these are what we call bad ethics, yeah. But there's a belief that these bad ethics are good.
What did you say?
What?
All right. Oh, did they check my? That didn't mind, yeah. Did not charge it down. Any two down say, you go to what? That penata, Kashi and Tinu, that penata. That young she, the Miba, young she didn't say, come by now, young chick. Chok the thing, young king root in the chunks, didn't know the chunks there by now, did chok the diet, dot on that. What about
you? Young Chamber, young Chamber.
Comba, comba, Miba, young she, the papa did the me, papa in the quenchy there, so. Chang was not compass. So, yes, there by now.
Me, papa, no. Then there are also certain there's also concepts of belief that in certain modes of conduct are good, yeah. So certain modes of conduct involve one's dressing, yeah. Wearing or let's say you know, human skin, or holding on to you know, bones and skeletons and donning oneself with them. So that would be like dress, yeah. And in the text it says, yeah, religious discipline or conduct which requires certain forms of dress, yeah. So people wearing, you know, adorning themselves with skeletons and with human skin, and then human skin, yes. That there's some manner would so in the commentaries an example of a bad manner is you know, so here the example tsuru. So here, an example of a bad manner would be standing on one's leg and then just observing the sun as it moves across the sky. And then regarding that such a way of behavior, it's fantastic. Then what about speech and physical behavior? So examples of the bad mode of conduct involving speech and behavior would be abiding naked and then keeping silence.
What did they say? That and that. That
The point is that there are people who hold on to these behaviors, you know, by thinking that it will lead them to liberation. You know. That's the thing. The people who engage in these conducts, yeah, thinking that, you know, they will become liberated, yeah, and also they, yeah. So the person who holds who has these views about these forms of bad ethics and bad modes of conduct, this person then also regards his or her own body and mind as something good, you know, yeah, as something good, as supreme, and he thinks that by engaging in these forms of ethics and behavior, he purifies his aggregates body and mind, you know.
Oh, tanda tinde sumse ta tanda nyumbo timbare karasana tanda ta tanda sudimdu ta tanda zo tanda tinde misare pena karasana
It's stated here in the teachings that there are people who remember their past lives as a dog or as a pig, you know, right? So then they concluded that because they were a pig or a dog, and because of acting like a dog or a pig in their past lives, this is how they got their present human rebirth. So with that conclusion, then in this life as a human being, then they engage, you know, in the conduct of a pig and a dog, behaving like a pig, sleeping like a pig, sleeping like a pig, and behaving like a dog.
What did they start? Tinde shi yungu yusare, ta tanda tinde sungsha. O ta tanda yi, ta tanda nyingbo de la karasana. Ta, ba towa topchi ki gyuru madunga ki, ta dushu. Ani taga nangshi, ani tsurim lukpa tinzo. Ta, ani chok res, o tinde tabayi na, ta tsurim lukpa tinzo, chosin se di ima da ta.
So basically, if the mind, which the belief in these bad forms of ethics, you know, and in these wrong modes of conduct, which will never lead to liberation, but believing them to be supreme, you know, such a view is called, as it says in the text, it is called a belief in the supremacy of ethics and religious discipline. Yeah. Okay, the last one, wrong view. What is this? What is wrong view? It is an afflictive intelligence that denies the existence of things such as past and future lives or karma and its effects, or that believes that the cause of living beings is a divine creator or a primal essence,
etc.
So within wrong views, so if you look at it, you know, there are wrong views that deprecates reality. But there are wrong views that superimposes, you know, qualities and characteristics that do not exist in reality, right? Okay. So an example of a wrong view that deprecates, you know, that or denies, you know, is the thought thinking that there is no karma, yeah. Basically, the wrong view that deprecates, basically, or a deprecation, is an act of denying something which exists. Then in the text it says, or that believes that the cause of living beings is a divine creator or primal essence. Yeah. So that would be an example of a wrong view that superimposes or exaggerates. Basically, let's say you have an eye, the people who think that, oh, the world is created by some being, you know, such as Ishvara. So that is a wrong view, you know, that's superimposes or yeah.
What in the shot that on that in the shot that on that jigito tenant horn that tenant of the Kong tomorrow on the chimney, you move on the ingi, umata you will only want to check with you also to such.
So, this is how the afflictions are identified from the shared perspectives of the higher and the lower tenets, yeah. Whereas the explanation according to the consequence middle way school will be explained below.
What in the sum shah that in Nibala sum said in Bakarina Kanshita Niba Karita Mongosumas that you want Chidra give it in Badabe, Chidra give it in Basidin Sarina. Then you can just give it in Basin Doctor.
Okay, next is the order in which the next section, yeah, is the order in which the afflictions arise, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, doctor, that is my son. La, ane si tira pana chikta ta maripani ane si. Kagare sinita, kaware sindeveta, then a son, Carson, Zoto, the Papa Tometa, Anichi, the Vinina Sobe, Doxin Share, the Vachik, you might, but the Sungu at Tambotita, when you kaware, Chitana Maripas, and Kagare sin Sunish.
Okay, so here, if we consider ignorance and the view of the transitory collection to be different, yeah, as is asserted by, let's say, on one hand Ayaya Sangha, and then you have Vasubandhu, yeah. So if we assert that ignorance and the view of the transitory collection are different,
Dopala Moba Chungse, but the Tabin Nelu Missal and Television Loja Water, Pumbo Nelu Nelu Sawa, the Jim Maribu Mumbale Pumbola Doctor to a Kela, attending emotion of Kyo Sotosunshi.
Okay. Let's say if we consider, if we view ignorance to be different from the view that, if we think of ignorance to be different from the view of the transitory collection, yeah? Okay, we look from that perspective, yeah? Okay? So it says, one way to look at this is to consider ignorance as distinct from the view of the perish, the view of the transitory collection. For example, when twilight falls on a coiled rope, its status as a rope will be unclear, and someone may imagine that it is a snake. Similarly, according to this view, The misapprehension of the aggregates as a self arises due to the darkness of ignorance, which prevents clarity about how the aggregates exist. The other afflictions then develop from this misapprehension. So according to the view that ignorance and the view of the transitory collection are different, then the order in which they arise is this. First, ignorance, then the view of the transitory collection. And in this order, the ignorance here refers to just a mere misapprehension, yeah? A mere misunderstanding, yeah? Lack of knowledge. Okay? First, this ignorance arises, then the view of the transitory collection arises. So what is the opposite of being ignorant? You know, yeah. You have knowledge of something, isn't it? Yeah. So the opposite of knowledge is you're ignorant. You're not aware. You do not understand it. Yeah. So in this context, ignorance means this.
Yeah.
So yeah, if we take ignorance to be to mean not knowing, yeah. Okay? So ignorance arises first. This kind of ignorance, and then the view of the transitory collection. So this is the position of Aya Sangha and Vasubandhu.
O tukshine ta tinema ane chik ta ta marikpa sine jikta sine ta tanda karisa. Jiklong sine kade ta jikta kurang marikpa resa ta tanda ini ta marikpa sayde tanda ini masheba zama shikma resa ta tanda kudawa.
So on the other hand, if we assert that ignorance is not just a mere lack of understanding or knowledge of something, if we assert ignorance to be actually a misapprehension, an active fundamental misapprehension of things, yeah, right? Then yeah, so which is the view of Dhammakirti, and also that which is asserted by the Middle Way School, yeah.
Oh, tuksin hita ti sungai la ti imbare ta tanda ti ni cik tu na cik ta ni mungkin di marikpa ho ta tanda ta cik ta korang marikpa res ta tanda ti sungai ta tanda cik ta korang marikpa res ta apa cik ta marikpa sedi kau maris ta ti sungguh yore.
So according to this view, basically ignorance is the view of the transitory collection. Yeah. So on the other hand, if you hold that ignorance and the view of the transitory collections are identical, then the view of the transitory collection is itself the root of the afflictions.
Identical. tindarisha, ta sumba luk nidang, ta tanda tindire, ta tanda kandar, ta luk medawa tindeshe, kabanamish, sundan tinde midawa yodevashe, ta tanda mishevasam the maribas shae, and mishevasam the shagamare, mishevasam gamare, ta tanda ini, ta karswara poke, you can watch it, but change a lot of shooting, lush progress in it, shatanship, ta.
Basically, essence is that you, according to the great masters, yeah, the of the past, the basically at the end of the day, there came to be two different ways of looking or identifying what ignorance is. Yeah. So there's one school of thought which thinks of ignorance is to be just a mere lack of knowledge or lack of understanding of something, yeah. But then there's another school of thought which feels that ignorance is not just a mere lack of understanding of something. In fact, it is a mind which is actively misapprehending. It's actively misapprehending something. So that is what ignorance is, yeah. Okay.
That tanda ni kandar ta tinde luk meda ni yunga ta tanda kandar ta ta kandar tire ta tanda kandar ta mari be kien che che ta ni mon hama na ke yunga ta chi pai pare
ba. Anyway, point is from ignorance comes the all the afflictions, yeah. When the view of the transitory collection apprehends a self, discrimination arises between self and other. Once you have made the distinction, you become attached to what is associated with yourself and hostile towards that which pertains to others. So the rest of the afflictions arises from the view of the transitory collection, right? So, you remember our discussion of the view of the transitory collection in this context, right? Remember? There's this belief that there's this I or self that is like an owner of the aggregates, completely different, separate, you know, from the body and mind, yeah? Apprehending that we exist in such a way, right? Yeah. Then, you know, when you have a strong apprehension or strong, if you have such a belief, then naturally, because there's a strong concept of one's or self, then the concept of others arises. Yeah. Then there's strong discrimination between one and others. Right. So based on this discrimination of oneself and others, then you come to associate those things that are associated with you on my side, things or people who are on my side, and then one develops attachment for them. And things and events or people who are associated with others, you know, And when in relation to them, we develop hostility. Then, as you observe the self, the mind also becomes inflated. Yeah. Based on this, then the pride develops. And then it says you develop a belief that, you know, that this very self is either permanent or subject to annihilation. And then we will come to believe in the supremacy of a view of the self and the like. And also to believe in the supremacy of the detrimental practices associated with such views. Similarly, you develop the wrong view that denies the existence of things such as the teacher who taught selflessness and that which he taught, karma and its effects, the four noble truths, the three jewels, and so forth. Or else you become doubtful as to whether such things exist or are real, as the Dhammakirti mentioned in the commentary on the Companion of Valid Connection. Once there is a self, there is an idea of an other. On behalf of self and other, there is attachment and hostility. All of the faults come about in association with these. So therefore, in essence, it's important for us to understand the order in which the afflictions arise. Yeah? How all the afflictions arise from the view of the transitory collection. Yeah? Based on the view of the transitory collection, all these afflictions arise, you know? And there's the order in which they do so. So it would be good to know if you can produce a chart, you know? Or if you write it down in order. You know? So if you can, if you think about it, you know, how the view of the transitory collection is the basis, you know, for all the other afflictions to arise, you know, the order in which they arise. You know, but if you think about it and then you write it down, okay?
Yeah.
So of course, in order to do this successfully, we first must identify correctly what the afflictions are. So 10 afflictions are given here, right? You have to identify them individually, identifying them correctly, and then on the basis then you see how and the view of the transitory collection acts as the basis for all the other afflictions to arise.
Yeah.
So, if you have any questions pertaining to the 10 afflictions, you may bring it up now, yeah. Pertaining to this section. Yeah. 10.
Can I clarify the two approaches, the Vasubandhu approach and the second one? I'm just wondering, because it seems like both systems do somehow arrive at the conclusion that the view of the transitory collections is the root of the afflictions. So I'm just wondering, in actual practice, is there a particular significance that there are these two different systems? Because it seems to me the differentiation is regarding, you know, ignorance. One, the first system is saying that ignorance is the basis for the view of the transitory collection. The second one is saying ignorance is the view of the transitory collection, right? So my question is that in practical terms, in terms of doing practice, is there a significance to this differentiation? Because it sounds like both systems at the end of the day agree that the view of the transitory collections is the root of all afflictions.
The point I'm trying to make here is all has to do with the meaning of ignorance. Yeah. So there's one school of thought, as I mentioned, which views ignorance to be the opposite of knowledge. Okay? So in this school of thought, ignorance is just the complete or the direct opposite of knowledge, which means not knowing. So this is one interpretation of what ignorance is. Yeah, ignorance is just that. Just the opposite of knowledge, which means not knowing. So this is one school of thought, yeah? That's quite straightforward, right? Ignorance, what is ignorance? Is the opposite of knowledge. What is the opposite of knowledge? Not knowing. So this is one way of interpreting ignorance, you know. But there's another school of thought which says that this understanding of ignorance alone is not sufficient. Ignorance is more than that. Ignorance is not just the mere opposite of not knowing. Ignorance has to be a mind that engages in its objects erroneously. Basically, there's a misapprehension. It's not just not knowing. It's a misapprehension of the object. Yeah. So this is the thing that we have to understand, yeah? That there are two ways of looking at ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Practice what you're asking about that. You say about internal practice what?
No, the order of the arising is different, yeah. So how the afflictions arise, yeah, in that section, yeah. First there's a discussion of how, based on ignorance, then the view of the transitory collection arises, yeah. So that's one explanation, yeah. The other is that the two are the same, you know.
My question is about The three mental non-virtues, covetousness, ill will, and wrong views. So we learned that, for example, covetousness, how you accumulate the karma is, basically it's an affliction. So you mentioned that it was a path of action, you know, because it was an affliction. So looking at these 10 major afflictions, I was just thinking that you could say covetousness seems to be a combination of maybe an erroneous view of the transitory collection as well as arising from pride or attachment. But in terms of the fact that covetousness is one of the main 10 non-virtues and it is an affliction, then where does it fall? Is there a particular, because I'm not familiar with this, is there a particular secondary root affliction that is called covetousness? Or how do we arrive at covetousness being it seems to be a main non-virtue. So I'm trying to understand this better. Because number 10, wrong views, I mean, in terms of the 10 non-virtuous actions, wrong views is mentioned as the 10th non-virtue, and it also is categorized in the 10 major afflictions. So it seems to be very clear that way, but for something like covetousness or even malice, then it's not so clear, so perhaps Genna could clarify this.
So basically, covetousness is it's included among within a desire attachment, and malice is included within anger. Yeah.
I have difficulty understanding. Just now, you asked us to think about how the view of the transitory collection is the cause of the other affliction. So I will assume that out of this 10 affliction, the view of the transitory collection will be the cause, and then the rest of the 9 affliction will be like a result of this of the view of the transitory collection. And out of these 10, ignorance is one of them. But ignorance is the base from which the view of the transitory collection arises. So this, I'm quite confused.
Very easy. We just assume, not assume, I mean, ignorance, if we take ignorance and the view of the transitory collection to be the main, to be the same thing, then there's no need for, you will not have this question.
No need to have the headache.
But if you assert the ignorance and the view of the transitory collection to be different, then ignorance comes first, then the view of the transitory collection comes next.
Okay. Yeah.
Ken Rinpoche. Would like to clarify about ignorance. You clearly explained that one is lack of knowledge, the other is actively comprehending. Now, I could put it that way, that misapprehending is arising from not knowing, lacking of the knowledge. So could I say that the ignorance, the second one, that means misapprehending, is even if you, even after you understand the knowledge, you still misapprehend the object. These are the differences. I repeat.
There's an ignorance that understands but still misapprehends it.
That's right.
There's such an ignorance.
One is like, because it's I'm trying to clarify it.
Yeah.
There's ignorance with two schools of thoughts.
Yes.
Yeah. One is lack of knowledge, ignorance. Second is actively misapprehending
an
object, right? Yeah. Now, I could, in my ignorance mind, that because of lack of understanding, therefore, I misapprehend.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So whatever is a misapprehension is necessarily a lack of knowledge as well.
That isn't my point. My point is, the second one, the misapprehending, actively misapprehending, the differentiation would be, despite knowing, you still misapprehend.
So if you say this, that means if you misapprehend something, not necessarily out of a lack of knowledge.
That's right.
That's the entailment, right? So it is possible to know of something.
Yeah, the distinction between the lack of knowledge. I can say I'm lacking of knowledge, therefore I misapprehend. Linking the two together.
Okay.
Yeah. Another thing is, I could say, despite I know, I misapprehend.
But what's the thing? Is it?
The thing is, because if you distinct the differences there are, if you distinct, there is a difference between lack of knowledge and actively misapprehending.
Okay.
If there is a difference between these two, if these two are the same, there's no question. The two schools in fact the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if there is a difference, then my question arises. That means the lack of knowledge and the actively miscomprehending are exactly the same, and they are just a different way of describing ignorance.
Now, which position? The first or the second position?
I'm just trying to.
You're more interested to see the first view, right?
Whether there is a difference.
So in the first system, there's a distinction made between just a mere not
knowing and misapprehension of the object. Yeah.
In the first school, that means in the first school is saying that the misapprehending and the lack of knowledge are different. But where is the second school? Could I then conclude that they see they are the same?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, thank you. And my second question is that regarding bad forms of ethical discipline, just for instance, just give an example so that I understand. Like having the 10 virtuous ethical action, 10 virtuous ethical action. Yeah. Without bodhicitta, without wisdom, understanding, emptiness. That would classify that is a bad form of ethical discipline? Yeah?
Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson.
Digible that Shakaman was a Sudim Lopa said it. Sudim Chawa said it in the Jilla Shakyama, that is a Makana. In Jimmy J. Tony Togata and Chanju Simqua and Mabarwa. Tondani, but there's a Sigmaris that on the Sudim or Sigmaris.
So bad ethics do not refer to just that. No, it's not just, it's not about, keeping ethics without bodhicitta, keeping ethics without, let's say, the view of emptiness. No.
You know, the reason why I highlight that is because if you believe only the 10 virtues and thinking that would be enlightenment, it needs one to enlightenment without understanding, wisdom, understanding emptiness, and without bodhicitta, and that 10 virtue alone would lead to enlightenment. That's why my question.
Oh, you're thinking about the thought which thinks, I just practice 10 virtues, I'll achieve enlightenment.
That's right.
Whether
that
is
classify as bad form
a belief in the supremacy? Or, yeah,
yeah, oh. Yeah, that's right.
That's the question, yeah.
Yeah.
So your question is, or what you're trying to understand is, the belief that I practice 10 virtues alone will lead me to enlightenment.
Yes.
Whether that is a bad view or not.
Would that classify where?
Yeah, the belief in the supremacy of ethics and.
That one, I don't think so.
Don't think so.
Yeah.
But 10 virtues alone, would that lead to enlightenment?
So if we practice the 10 virtues with the intention of achieving liberation, let's say, it would become a cause for liberation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be, yeah. But without it, that intention?
Yeah. I know that was the question, right?
Yes.
That's the question also. That's the same question I asked before. That's what I want. Then, Chimat Tonyergi, that good and long, that's Sudim Suna. Chimango the Lamet Ton the Nyes, Sudim Suna. Chimango the Lamet Guru Toguro, Tobe Guru Toguro.
If we practice ethics with the goal of achieving a good rebirth, either as a human being or as a God, then that practice of ethics will become a cause for us to be reborn as a human being or as a God, wouldn't it? So depending on the goal and the intention, the same practice of ethics leads to different results. It can be, the practice of ethics can lead to enlightenment, it can lead to liberation, or it can lead to a good rebirth, depending on your motivation. So, back to the question earlier, which I gave you earlier. If we practice ethics just to seek some kind of reward, happiness in this life, then it doesn't become a cause for good rebirth. It doesn't become a cause for liberation. It doesn't become a cause for enlightenment. What do you think?
What do you think? Yes? No? Huh? Yeah.
Welcome.
I just came to listen to the class. Today is my first lesson here. And my personal opinion about the two schools of thought, actually they are actually the same. Let me explain to you why. It's a bit high, a bit low. Okay. Basically, the first school of thought say that ignorance is not knowing. That means opposite of wisdom. You see, it's a very simple way of explaining that actually you understand the things wrongly. But the second school of thought says that it's more than that. Why is it more than that? Because sometimes we think that we got the right knowledge of a thing, but actually it's wrong. That might not be the correct knowledge that we have about the things. And because of not knowing the real nature about that thing, because we will tend to have these transitory collections coming on, and it will lead to the 10 afflictions, which is you attach to it, and you feel that this is mine, and you start to have anger, delusion towards the thing. This is my personal opinion.
So you say the first one is knowing something wrongly, yeah? That's what you said, right? So if that's the case, there's no difference between the first one and the second one. So you said that ignorance is the first one, ignorance is the opposite of wisdom.
Yeah.
But ignorance is not necessarily the opposite of wisdom, because in order to say that, first you have to posit what is wisdom, you know. So in order to say that ignorance is the opposite of wisdom, we first must be able to posit or identify what exactly wisdom is.
Yeah.
So here in this context, wisdom will be posited or identified as the wisdom that realizes the emptiness of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person. In this context, yeah. The mind which realizes that a self-sufficient person does not exist whatsoever. So if this is wisdom, and if you identify
ignorance to be the opposite of wisdom, then ignorance would be?
Misheba, samna shana tukiyo. Di doksho, sadhukala, dhagpila, chinjolo tushubhaji.
So, if that's what wisdom is, and if you say that ignorance is the opposite of wisdom, then ignorance cannot be just a mere not understanding something. The opposite of wisdom has to be a fundamental misapprehension of the self, apprehending the self to be self-sufficient, for example, in order for it to be a opposite of wisdom. Yeah, if we say that, let's say.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
So because you say that this is the first school of thought, but this is not the first school of thought, see? Because the first school of thought is just a mere not understanding, see? So if you take the first school to mean mere not understanding, then ignorance cannot be the opposite of wisdom. Ignorance cannot be the opposite of wisdom. If ignorance is taken to mean just not knowing something, yeah. But for the second school of thought, the ignorance and the view of the transitive collection is the same, yeah. And the ignorance is a fundamental misapprehension. Then you can say that it is the opposite of wisdom.
So for the those who assert that ignorance and view of transitory collection are separate, how would they assert that the ignorance would be the root of cyclic existence? That since ignorance is mere lack of knowledge, removing that would be allowing the person to be liberated from cyclic existence, whereas removing the conception or apprehension of self-sufficient person is not going to be a liberating factor. Because the assertion of Asanga and Vasubandhu, the Mind Only and Sutra schools, they both assert that removal, you know, realizing the emptiness of a self-sufficient person leads to liberation. So my question is, since the view...
What's your question?
My question is, how does...
What is the root of samsara?
For the ignorance that is separate from the view of transitory collection...
Separate, you talk about the first
separate,
view.
Yeah, first yeah. one. Ignorance is asserted to be the root. So how do they assert that, you know, this ignorance, which is mere lack of knowledge, is the root, and removing this root allows them to be liberated from samsara? Because it seems like you remove the view of the transitive collection is enough for them to be liberated from cyclic existence. Like realizing the emptiness of the self-sufficient person, which is the view of the transitive collection, is enough to liberate one from cyclic existence. Whereas here, since the ignorance is separate from the view of transitory collection, you have to remove ignorance as well.
So both systems assert that ignorance is the root. Yeah, you need to overcome ignorance, right? In order to, yeah. And the thing that overcomes ignorance is wisdom, yeah. So both schools are the same in asserting this. So whether you assert ignorance to be different from the view of the transitory collection or not,
both schools accept that it is the view of selflessness that will overcome ignorance. So according to the first system, therefore, the view of the selflessness will only remove the view of the transitory collection, but there's still ignorance, which is the mere not understanding something. Still not able to remove ignorance. So the view of selflessness, there is no ignorance that cannot be defeated by the view of selflessness.
But we understand from tenets that the assertion of the mind only and the sutra schools, the obstructions to liberation would be the self-sufficient, substantially existent person.
Yeah,
which is a view of a transitory collection. So, and then therefore the path to liberation will be realizing the selflessness or emptiness of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person for them. Therefore, if you realize the emptiness of this view of transitory collection, without going back for one step to realize the emptiness of ignorance or whatever it is, to remove, eliminate ignorance, just eliminating the view of a transitory collection is enough if they are asserted to be separate, distinct entities.
simple question. I want to clarify for the nine one, the supremacy of ethics and religious discipline. These are all relating only to those views and practices that obstruct liberation from cyclic existence. That means you are talking about these people who hold this view are those that actually want to be liberated, right? They want, and not just referring to any, like for example, non-Buddhist views that, or non-Buddhist practices. Is that right? Is that what I'm saying here? Under this classification of afflictions.
Which one? You're talking about the nine one?
Yeah, number nine. Yeah, number nine. Number nine, because it's talking about things that ethics or discipline or practices that believe that can remove you from cyclic existence. That means in the first place, these people must have a view to want to be liberated from cyclic existence. We are referring to this. That means not just, for example, non-Buddhist practices. In the first place, they don't know what is cyclic existence, or they don't care. Or those practices are not, doesn't fall under this affliction. Is that right?
But if you say that, then these people also don't know what is liberation. What? They are aiming for liberation, but they also don't know what is liberation. I mean, going by your reasoning. Yeah,
yeah, that's why I'm trying to understand where this classification, how broad it is, and why. Because I see in the because this goes back to the beginning, although it says affliction is anything that disturbs the mind, but you see the whole list is actually
they don't disturb the mind.
they are all talking about things that actually prevents you from liberation, you see. So it doesn't talk about any Of course, those are secondary or secondary, you know, that comes much, much later. But this classification, this list, seems to be attacking those that are, that prevents you from liberation. Is that where is it coming from?
So these views, the view of the sensory collection, the view holding on to the extreme, the bad conception of, I can't remember what, anyway, those five things, these are all beliefs, you know, that come about through thinking, you know. That's why they say afflicted wisdoms or afflicted intelligence. Yeah. They all come about through thinking, yeah. So most of these views are views that come about as a result of thinking. Yeah. So as a result of thinking, then the mind believes, you know, or concludes that, oh, it must be this or it must be that. So in order to overcome these views, therefore we have to also engage in thinking, of course thinking correctly, to oppose these afflicted intelligence. Basically, we need discriminating wisdom. The first five. The first five, they're starting with attachment, you know, what else you have? Anger, pride, doubt. Yeah, okay. So, whether, we need to think about, you know, whether these afflictions arise as a result of afflicted intelligence or wisdom. Do they arise from thinking?
Oh, to the sherak.
So basically, in order to overcome these five non-views, yeah, the five non-views are attachment, you know, and doubt and anger and so forth, whether the antidote needs to involve a strong element of wisdom or not. Because in the text, the afflictions are classified as the five views, the five of afflicted views, right? And then you have the five non-views here. So this is something we need to think about. Why there's this different way of classifying the afflictions? Afflictions that are non-views, then there are also the afflicted views. Why?
Can I please clarify just one point? It's regarding the ninth affliction. conflictive view regarding dress code, because Ken Rinpoche mentioned the wearing of skulls and skeletons and so on, but I keep on hearing human skins, and I'm just wondering, like, is Ken Rinpoche actually referring to wearing of animal skins? Because I don't understand where human skins come from.
I'm sure Ken Rinpoche at this age will be able to distinguish between an animal and a human being.
No, it could be my hearing. It could be, obviously it's my hearing.
Well, it could be my translation.
What is human skin? That sounds like... No. Ken Rinpoche, it sounds like something a serial killer would do, you know? But, like, how would you wear human skin?
Why not? Good.
Huh?
In the good old days, the cemeteries, you just throw the corpses there, or you just go and flay them, you know?
Confirmation, it's actually human skin we're talking about, yeah? Okay, thank you.
The text said like that.
Yeah. Was it? No. It was an important piece of clarification.
Okay, I'm going to try.
Okay. What scheme?
Before he tells me to go to sit down. My humble point of view. With regards to if we just keep the 10 virtuous actions, and it might be for very selfish, so that this life is, one's living it more virtuously. In the class I attended with you quite recently, Venerable Gemme, I had the impression that 16 lifetimes later, enlightenment is possible. Having taken some initiation, or maybe I had the wrong impression. Just keeping virtuous actions.
No.
16 lifetimes.
That was not what I said.
You didn't say that. You didn't say that? Okay. My take would be that to keep virtuous actions should inevitably lead to enlightenment, however many lifetimes that is. Right?
No? The question is, without the motivation...
If you just
keep the 10 virtuous actions, let's say, in order to avoid getting into trouble with the law, for example. So does that have a long-term result or not? That's the question.
No, I didn't think that at all, My point is, like, if at the end of a day one makes aspirational prayers that, when death should occur, then at least, if not enlightenment, then at least either your Shambhala or good precious human rebirth to continue on the path. Right? So it's okay to think that at least to try to keep the 10 to keep the 10 virtuous actions in the aspiration that sooner or later it is going to lead to the ultimate goal of liberation. I'm just trying to say that I would take it that yes, it is okay to even say to try to keep the 10 virtuous actions in the simple life, just for that, because early on I think Ken Rinpoche asked, is it okay, is it Dharma or not Dharma, right? Did I not understand that question? When you ask the question, is it Dharma or not Dharma to do virtuous actions?
No, to do virtuous actions only for the sake of this life, only, nothing to do with the future, is it Dharma? Then will it lead to good results in the future life? That's the question.
A misinterpretation of the question. Earlier on, another question. About what would lead to God realms, and Benny said at least keeping the sila of non-killing. Yes, right. Can everybody ask a question? What would lead to God realms or demi-god realms? And Benny. Contributed that to non-killing, virtuous actions.
Yes.
What about those who give of their life? Does that lead to God realms? The people who go to Maison Sans Frontier, the people who are in the front line of the fire, the people who work in those kind of professions, every day they can give their life. Does that lead to the God realms?
Understand the question? Did you understand my question? Can we push it? You guys are confused.
You understand my question?
Yeah.
I hope so.
So the question is, you know, there are people who give, yeah, aiming for some reward in this life, let's say reputation or whatever, like, you know, looks good, or practice, or to give up killing, but, you know, only motivated by some reason associated with this life alone.
Okay.
The motivation is looking for some reward in this life. Then you practice giving. Then you give up killing. So are those actions dharma or not? Are they virtue or not? Are they virtue or not? Are they virtue or not? Okay, are they dharma or not? If there's virtue, then it's necessary dharma, right? So it's not dharma, but it's virtue.
They still were in kindergarten. Yeah.
The what? The who? No, they want to achieve liberation. There are many people in this world who are like that, isn't it? Focus to get some reward in this life, they give, practice charity, or they stop doing certain things, right? So are those actions dharma or not? So then they are not virtue, right? Or they are virtue? So these actions will ripen as a result in the future, right? So the result of these actions will lead to a good rebirth, isn't it? Well, if it doesn't ripen in this life, it definitely ripens in future lives, right? Ah. Then it ripens as suffering or ripens as happiness. Ah. Yes or no?
You're going to answer or what?
Yeah, but then...
No question. Now it's answer time.
Yes or no?
Okay. Those things that we do, virtuous, right? Done without the motivation for future life happiness, right? It's still considered as virtue. And it will still result in future life happiness.
So no motivation one?
No motivation. Okay. However, no motivation for, you know, future life and liberation.
No,
so all these are still
no
virtue.
Motivation.
Yeah, virtues and lead to virtues result in the future life. I think it still does. However, it's not considered as dharma. Because for it to be dharma, it has to be conjoined with renunciation.
Oh, no.
Ah. So as such,
it's
contaminated virtuous karma. Yeah. I'll consider as contaminated virtuous karma.
It seems like you have not understood the concept of the three types of persons, right? If we debate, let's say.
Okay.
That the three types of persons, right?
Yes.
So, not necessarily you must be looking for liberation, right?
Yes.
So when you practice Dharma, not necessarily you must look for liberation or enlightenment, right? In order for it to be Dharma.
Yes.
But in Buddhism, no, but in Buddhism, isn't it Dharma, true path and true cessation? If Dharma is true path and true cessation, that it then it has definitely has to conjoin with renunciation.
So whatever is Dharma is necessary true path, true cessation.
Or is there a Dharma that is not true path and true cessation?
Huh?
So you're saying that there's a true Bodhichit- there's a Dharma that is not true path and true cessation, right?
Yeah, that's Dharma true. So what is true path?
Yeah. What's the definition? Yeah.
True path.
Yeah.
Mind that is conjoined with renunciation.
Huh?
Conjoined with renunciation.
Oh. So that means you don't understand three jewel.
So what's the boundary of the three jewels? Boundary. So the boundary of the Dharma jewel. When we say boundary, that means what it encompasses, yeah. I mean, in technical language, it's sort of boundary, but boundary means what it encompasses, basically.
Doesn't it encompass true path and true cessation?
So, so, so,
is true path and true cessation present in the continuum of an ordinary person?
No.
So, only the Arya, only superior beings possess these true path and true cessation, right?
Yes.
Except, right? So, all the paths in the continuum of a person on the path of accumulation are not Dharma? Bodhicitta is not Dharma. Oh. Renunciation is not Dharma. Including the refuge in your minds.
You do like that.
So the Dharma in the context of the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha is to be differentiated from the Dharma that we are talking here in general. That which is Dharma and that which is non-Dharma. So the question is, there's no motivation beyond this life. We don't care about anything else. We just care about this life. In order to achieve something in this life, I give. I practice ethics. Will my actions have any results in the life beyond this? Yes or no? Mostly say yes, right? Most people say yes, right? Okay. So you all say yes, right? So therefore, it follows that intention is not important. There's no need to practice with the intention to achieve a good rebirth. And therefore, also dedication will become... There's no point in dedicating merit. Anyway, you will ripen anyway in the future. What? You follow? You understand? So no need to generate motivation. No need to dedicate merit.
Sudim
So if you practice ethics, but you motivate and dedicate it towards a good rebirth, would it result in a good rebirth? Similarly for liberation and enlightenment. If you practice ethics to achieve liberation, and you dedicate towards liberation, would it result in liberation? So there are three people who practice ethics, but they experience different results. One gets a good rebirth, one gets liberation, one gets enlightenment. They practice the same thing, but what is it that causes them to have a different result? What? So practicing ethics for this life and giving in this life will have no result in the future. Accept or not? Because the motivation is seeking happiness in this life, so therefore it will become a cause for the happiness in this life. You accept, right? But to say that there's no effect in the future is emotionally difficult, yeah? It's an emotionally difficult thing to accept, right?
Okay, we stop here. Not so much emotion, huh?
Leave everything here. Okay, we'll finish off with the usual prayers.